one side of the aisle really wants the child tax credits, and they say, okay, we'll vote for your child tax credits, but you got to vote for this business-friendly bonus depreciation. The great news is those are always been tied together. So in 2025, when it expires, both the child tax credits and the bonus depreciation expire again in 2025 if this gets passed, which means they're probably going to extend it again because, again, they want the child tax credits. The other side wanted the bonus depreciation. So it's kind of a tit for tat, and it's been working really well for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Passive Income Brothers podcast.
Here, we take the fear out of real estate investing using real-life stories of everyday successful investors.
Let's go.
Welcome to another episode of the Passive Income Brothers podcast. My name is Tim Lyons, and today I'm joined by two absolute rock stars, one of which being my brother, Greg. How are you doing today, buddy?
Tim never gets old, but I am ready to rock and roll today because we have a fantastic guest that knows cost segregation like the back of his hand.
So many of you might be driving or maybe out for a walk or food shopping or folding laundry, and you're saying, what the heck is cost segregation? And
don't turn us off.
Why would the Passive Income Brothers want to talk to us about some minute thing like cost segregation? And what I'm going to tell you is buckle up, get the notebook out, sharpen those pencils, because as my listeners know, Eric, I am infatuated with taxes. I'm obsessed. I love to learn about them. I love to learn how to use them. It's one of our biggest expenses that we all face every single year. So if you're ready to learn about how real estate, the magic almost, Tom Wheelwright calls it the magic of taxes. Let's get ready for Eric Oliver from the Cost Segregation Authority. How are you doing today, Eric?
I'm good, good. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, well, it's our pleasure. So, Eric, you know, here at the Passive Income Brothers podcast, we are usually real estate focused, right? More on the passive investing side in syndications, multifamily, self-storage, industrial triple net leases. And our investors get something called a K-1 statement at the end of the tax year. But a lot of people don't know exactly what that means, right? There's net income and there's net losses, right? Or losses from rental activities. And a lot of times we hear something from our investors saying, well, you know, my tax guy or my tax gal, or a lot of times it's only a tax preparer, doesn't know what to do with this kind of stuff. So I want to, you know, bring it, we'll go full circle on taxes, but, you know, can you just kind of give us a plain Jane explanation of what is a cost segregation study?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So cost segregation really is just accelerated depreciation on your real estate asset. So one of the great benefits and one of the reasons why a lot of people get into real estate is for some of the tax benefits. So there's something called depreciation, which is the wear and tear on a building. And the IRS basically says that residential units will deteriorate over 27 and a half years. Commercial units will deteriorate over 39 years. And so if you don't do a cost segregation study, then you're taking what they call straight line depreciation. So just to make the math easy, let's say you buy a $390,000 office suite. That's a 39-year asset. So you take $390,000 divided by 39 years, and essentially you're getting a $10,000 write-off every year for the next 39 years. And then that write-off comes, it's an expense, it's a depreciation expense. It comes off of your taxable income. Which is great. That's, again, why a lot of us get into real estate is for some of these deductions. Now, if you do a cost segregation study, what we recommend is you know, I want my deductions now. I don't want the IRS to hold on to these deductions for 39 years. I mean, hell, I'm probably not going to own the building in 39 years. So I want to move forward or put forth as much depreciation as I can. And the way you do that is through an engineering-based study where you go in and you identify short-term assets within your building. So an example, when you buy an office suite, you're not just buying the parking lot, the desks and everything inside. You're also buying the flooring. You're buying the cabinets. You're buying the countertops. You're buying the light fixtures, all those different components. Those components can all be depreciated over a much faster useful life. Carpet doesn't last 39 years, and the IRS knows that. The IRS actually says carpet is a five-year asset. The problem being is when you buy that office suite, when you take that closing statement to your tax preparer and say, hey, I bought this for $390,000, your tax preparer has no idea the contents of that building, let alone the value of those contents. And so they have to just take it as one big lump sum asset and say, okay, this whole thing we're going to depreciate over 39 years. And so a cost segregation study is, just as the name implies, we're segregating the cost into different buckets, which allows you to front load or accelerate that depreciation. And, you know, there's a number of reasons why you'd want to do that. There's time value of money, there's inflation, number of reasons why you'd want to do that.
I was going to say, you know, the time value of money is so important, right? And you want to take those depreciation up front because, like you said, you're probably not going to own the building for 39 years or 30 years. You know, everyone gets a 30-year fixed rate mortgage on their home, but typically people don't live in their homes for 30 years. So when you talk about the time value of money and taking the depreciation up front, you know, what does that mean for the everyday real estate investor? And, you know, there's something also called bonus depreciation, where like people, bonus depreciation. So if you could just kind of walk us through, why should we want depreciation upfront and what is bonus depreciation?
Yeah, no, those are great questions. So you want the depreciation upfront because a dollar today is worth way more than a dollar 39 years, if you even own the building in 39 years. So what that means is I want my deductions now. I'm going to reduce my taxable income this year, which means I'm going to pay less taxes. I'm going to take that tax savings. I'm going to then go invest it in a new property, pay down my debt. I mean, hell, if you want to go buy a boat, go buy a boat. Do what you want with that tax savings. But I want that now versus a smaller amount evenly spread out over the next 39 years. And so that's really the whole idea behind the time value money. And then again, you have to add inflation in there. You know, a dollar today is worth way more than a dollar 39 years from now. You know, inflation is a hot topic right now. Obviously, hell, a dollar last year is worth way more than a dollar this year, just with the inflation rates we've been having. And so, again, front loading or taking that depreciation, at the end of the day, if you own the building for 39 years, in either scenario, it pencils out. You're getting the same amount of depreciation, but do you want even amount for the next 39 years, or do you want it front loaded and then maybe a smaller amount in those later years? And most people will choose to have it front loaded, so they can then reinvest and put that money back at work for them. So that's the answer to your first question. Your second question is a great question as well, bonus depreciation. So that's a term that gets thrown around a lot. Bonus depreciation really puts cost segregation on steroids. Bonus depreciation has been around for a number of years. The IRS uses bonus depreciation to stimulate the economy. So if the economy is not doing well, they're going to increase the bonus percentage. When the economy is doing well, they'll decrease the bonus percentage. And the idea is it just accelerates at even a faster rate your depreciation. So an example of that would be, let's say you buy a bulldozer for $1 million and you bought it at the beginning of 2017. The rules at the beginning of 2017 for bonus were it had to be a brand new asset. So you couldn't buy a used bulldozer. You had to buy a brand new bulldozer, and the asset had to have a useful life of 20 years or less, and it was 50% bonus. So I buy $1 million bulldozer, a brand new one. I get to write off or expense or take depreciation at 50% of that. So I get a $500,000 write-off in year one. The remaining 50% gets spread out over the useful life of that asset. So again, it just takes it and front loads it even at a faster rate. Now, that's bonus depreciation in a nutshell. Now, we had some major changes at the end of 2017 with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Donald Trump was our president. Donald Trump owns a lot of real estate, and Donald Trump revised the tax code and made it very favorable to real estate investors. Couple things changed. One, they increased it from 50% bonus to 100% bonus. So that was the big change. So any assets placed into service between 9/27 of 17 and 12/31 of 2022 were eligible for 100% bonus. So that was a big change. The second thing, which I think was more important, or more impactful, I should say, was they added five words to the tax code. Remember I said before you had to buy a brand new bulldozer. Under the new Tax Cuts and Jobs Act provisions, it only has to be new to you, the taxpayer. So they added five words to the tax code. I don't know if people in Congress even knew what that impact was of adding those five words. I think they just slipped it in, and I don't think people realize. But all of a sudden, I don't have to go buy a new bulldozer. I can actually buy a used bulldozer, which is new to me, the taxpayer, and all of a sudden I get 100% bonus. So if you go back to that example, I buy a used bulldozer now for $1 million. I get 100%, or I get the full $1 million deduction in year one. And so that's great. So let's kind of go back a little bit and say, how does this apply to real estate? You know, I don't know how many of your investors are buying bulldozers, so let's make this a little more relative to real estate. So when you talk about real estate, prior to 2017, prior to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, if you built a brand new building and had a cost segregation study done, we would go in, identify the 5, 7, and 15-year assets. Those all have a useful life under 20 years or less, and you were eligible for 50% of those deductions in year one. But it had to be a brand new building. You couldn't buy an existing building. Fast forwarded to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act at the end of 2017, all of a sudden you can go buy an existing building, doesn't it? Because those cabinets and that flooring is new to me, the taxpayer. Even though it's been there since 1980, it's new to me, the taxpayer. All of a sudden I get to put a value to those 5, 7, and 15-year assets, and I get to take 100% bonus depreciation on those assets. So to put some dollars to that, we usually segregate around 30% of a building into shorter asset lives. So if you buy, let's say you buy a building for $1.2 million, you always have to back land out. Land is non-depreciable. So let's say you buy it for $1.2 million, you determine that the land is worth $200,000. So that gives you $1 million of what we call depreciable basis. If you take that $1 million, do a cost seg study, we're going to come in and identify about 30% of that, or $300,000, into those 5, 7, and 15-year buckets. Well, that $300,000 is now eligible for 100% bonus, which means you get to take 100% of that, or $300,000, as a deduction in year one. So if I'm taking $300,000 and I'm in a 30% tax bracket, that's a $90,000 tax savings in the first year when I buy that $1 million asset. So in a situation where you have a syndication, that $300,000 of depreciation gets kicked out to everybody through the K-1, and it'll show up as a negative number on your K-1. And that negative number typically will flow through to your personal tax return, which allows you to take those deductions, potentially take those deductions against your income. There's some other nuances there about active and passive income and when those deductions can be used. But having that negative number on the books is a great tool that can be used for tax planning purposes. I mean, people can pull money out of retirement accounts and use that to offset. There's a number of different ways that you can use those deductions, but that's kind of how bonus depreciation and cost segregation work. Now, I should just add one quick thing. Bonus depreciation is scheduled to phase out. So I mentioned if you bought an asset between 9/27 of 17 and 12/31 of 2022, you are eligible for 100% bonus. Anything bought in 2023 is eligible for 80% bonus. Anything bought in 2024 is eligible for 60% bonus, and it drops 20% every year until 2027 when you're at 0%. Now, in saying that, hot off the press, recently, just this week, there was news that Congress has a bipartisan bill with bipartisan support that they're pushing through right now to extend the 100% bonus through 2025. So those assets you bought in 2023 that you thought you were getting 80% bonus on, if this does get passed, which I think there's a 95% chance it will get passed, and they're trying to fast track it and get it passed by January 29th. So today is the 19th. So here in the next 10 days, they should pass this bill, which will extend the 100% bonus through 2025. So that's amazing for real estate investors. It's, again, putting your deductions on steroids and creates huge savings, huge cash flow opportunities and tax savings opportunities for investors.
Eric, are you saying that Congress is going to be able to agree on a bill and actually pass it? Is that what you're telling me?
I said 95%.
95.
The reason I left that 5% in there is because it is Congress and God only knows what could happen in the next 10 days. But yes, I do think, you know, what happens is it gets bipartisan support. And the way that it works is this bonus depreciation is also tied to the child tax credit. So one side of the aisle really wants the child tax credits and they say, okay, we'll vote for your child tax credits, but you got to vote for this business friendly bonus depreciation. The great news is those are always been tied together. So in 2025, when it expires, both the child tax credits and the bonus depreciation expire again in 2025 if this gets passed, which means they're probably going to extend it again because, again, they want the child tax credits. The other side wanted the bonus depreciation. So it's kind of a tit for tat, and it's been working really well for real estate investors.
Well, listen, this is not a political show, but when both people get a little something and both people feel like they didn't win, nor did they lose, that's how things work, right? So as a real estate investor, I would love for them to be able to pass this because this is powerful. And if you guys are listening in the car, you don't have a chance to take notes. I mean, Eric just went on a 3-minute, maybe 4-minute, you know, knowledge bomb dropping spree that is a ton of information. He basically broke down what cost segregation is, how it's beneficial, the anatomy of it, where it came from, why we love it, which we're going to dive into a little bit deeper. And that, you know, Donald Trump, you know, love him or hate him or whatever, this was a bill that he passed, right? And here's where I really want to focus on the next segment, Eric and Greg, is that it's all about when you're investing in real estate, it should never be shiny object syndrome, right? We should have a strategy. We should have a plan. We should be educated, right? Because this is not a liquid investment. You jump in, you jump out, sexy profits, and, you know, then you're on the Lamborghini on Instagram, you know, whatever. No, that's not what it is. When you build out a team, and what does that team look like? It's a team like Eric Oliver having a cost segregation, right? And he has an accounting degree, an accounting background. It's also having a tax strategist, not only a tax preparer, but a tax strategist. You're going to pay for that. There's no doubt about it, right? Because at the end of the day, yes, we want somebody to prepare our taxes and know what they're doing and maybe get some money back, who knows? But when you have a strategy that you can actually use these tools, and as my mentor, he doesn't know it yet, but my mentor, Tom Wheelwright, who's one of the Rich Dad Advisors. He wrote a great book called Tax-Free Wealth, and it needs to be mandatory reading. It's a quick read. You can get through it in probably one or two sittings, and he writes it for the everyday investor, right? Believe me, if I can understand taxes and have an affinity and a love for them, I promise you can do it too. Mm. Tom Wheelwright says something, Eric. He goes, in the first like chapter of his book, he says two things. Number one, as a W-2 or a 1099 employee, you work until about April or May each year just to satisfy your tax liabilities. And when you let that sink in, and you also cross-reference Robert Kiyosaki's cash flow quadrant, if you know the ESBI, if you're on the employee, right, or the sole proprietorship side of the cash flow quadrant, which is also required reading here at Cityside Capital, you know, you don't have a lot of tax write-offs. You don't have a lot of tax, you know, strategies. And that's why you just go to H&R Block. Nothing against H&R Block, right? But that's what you do. You just kind of like, you know, roll through your taxes and you're on to the next thing. But when you're a real estate investor or you invest in small businesses or whatever, you're an entrepreneur, that's when you need a strategist. And I always say, Greg and Eric, you know, if you broke your ankle, you would not want to go see a neurosurgeon, right? They're both doctors. They both have MDs next to their name, but you want to go see an orthopedic surgeon. And it's the same thing for a CPA, right? There's farming CPAs. There's real estate CPAs. Most of them, and I love CPAs, are generalists, right? They're just trying to keep their head above water, right? Crank out returns and answer phone calls and emails and audits and, you know, stuff like that. So that was a long-winded way of saying, you know, you need a good CPA, real estate focused. If that's what you're going to do, real estate focused CPA, a real estate tax strategy, somebody like Eric Oliver and the Cost Segregation Authority to be able to provide the documentation. Eric, maybe in the next segment, you can take us through, what does that report look like? What does it cost? What are the parameters? How much does the building need to be? Is there a minimum? You know, and you know, on your website, there's a 100%, I don't know if it's a guarantee, but you know, defendable. It's a defensible, basically, packet of documents that your CPA can now take and run with and defend you. So, Eric, let's maybe move into that. You know, if somebody has a single family home right now, or they have a small retail strip center, or they might have a hotel, or, you know, who knows what they have right now. Or maybe they're just a part of one of our syndications, and they're part of the LPs, the limited partners, the passive income folks. And they get a K-1 at the end of the year, and they don't understand if they got, say, I don't know, say $8,000 in cash flow for the year, and they have a minus $63,000 loss, but they're saying, wait a minute, I didn't lose any money. You know, maybe talk a little bit about the tax preparation, the tax team. How does the cost seg work, and what is produced out of that study?
Yeah, that's a great question. So our deliverable back to you and your, and well, first of all, let me back up. One thing I love that you said, because I say this myself, is there's a huge difference between a tax preparer and a tax strategist. And I just want to make that point and drive that point home, because I see all too often people with very complex returns. They're real estate investors. They've got passive income, active income. Maybe they're invested in an opportunity zone. There's a number of things. And they're just going to the folks, to your generalist. And I look at CPAs as kind of your generalist, general practitioner. I use the same analogy that you use. You know, I go to my doctor if I'm sick, but if I have heart problems, I'm not going to go to my general practitioner and say, hey, can you do heart surgery? You've got to find a specialist. So that's the first thing. I just want to drive that home, because that's under-realized in the industry how important it is. People leave tens and tens of thousands of dollars in taxes on the table by taking the quick, easy, hey, I've got my documents. You give them to a tax preparer. Those tax preparers, all they do is they input it into a tax software and it spits out a number. And if you're only meeting with your tax preparer once a year to hand them those documents, you probably are leaving a lot of money on the table. You really want a strategist who understands real estate, understands the different strategies, and you should be meeting with them, you know, at least twice a year, if not every quarter, to say, hey, what's my income looking like? What kind of deductions am I going to have? So that you can start planning. Because sometimes, if you wait till the end of the year, it's too late to make those decisions. Or if you wait till the following year, till, you know, March, right before the April deadline, and you're handing them your tax stuff, it's too late. So just want to drive that home. Now, back to your original question, what does a cost segregation look like? Kind of what's the process? Our deliverable back to you and the client, or your tax preparer and the client, is usually a 40 or 50 page report. That report has a number of different documents. It's got all the backup documentation. It's got all the case law on why we're able to depreciate carpet over 5 years. All that information is in there. The most important piece of information, your tax preparer is probably honestly going to skip the first 49 pages. They're going to go back to that last page, which is a revised depreciation schedule that has every item broken out and summarized. And what they do is they upload that into their tax software. And so instead of on your depreciation schedule, on a typical depreciation schedule will say building $1 million, land $200,000. When you do a cost seg study, you're taking that building that says $1 million and you're breaking it up into different chunks. And so now you're going to say 5-year assets, things like flooring, cabinets, countertops, et cetera, $200,000. 15-year assets, such as your parking lot, curbs, gutters, asphalt. That's a category. All your land improvements, you're going to have a 15-year line that says another $100,000. So you're just breaking that up. That's our deliverable back to the tax preparer. So those, the IRS does, the IRS is aware of cost segregation. It's becoming more and more prevalent with the passing of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. They revise their audit guide. So they do have agents that will audit these. I found out we actually are in the middle of an audit now for one of our clients. I know people get nervous when I say audit. Please keep in mind, we do 12,000. We've done 12,000 studies. We've been involved in just 13 audits over the course of the last 15 years. The audit we were involved in, only was it 5%? So only 5% of their cost segregation experts will actually work on anything that they consider small. And small is like under $25 million. So that's the first thing. The chance of these getting audited is very slim. But if they are audited, you do want to make sure, one, you have a quality report. So there's the 13-step audit guide. The audit guide tells you all the different information that the agents are going to be looking for. And a quality report is going to follow those 13 steps. And so there's different types of reports out there. There are modeling reports, modeling approaches. So basically you type some information into a software and it models it and it spits out a number. Those are less defensible than what we call an engineering-based study, but those modeling reports are significantly less in cost. So, you know, you asked about what is the threshold for somebody to get involved in cost segregation. If you've got anything with a basis, a depreciable basis, which would be your purchase price minus land, of over about $250,000, you probably need to look into cost segregation. Now, it may make sense to just pay the small fee and get that modeling approach done, I tend to find out that just through running some analysis and seeing some of those reports are pretty conservative. You know, it might only be $1,000 to get the study done, but because it's using a modeling approach, it's a really conservative approach. And so you might get 20 to 22% segregation. If you do an engineering study, you're probably going to get 30 to 35% segregation. And so it's just a math equation to look and say, okay, yeah, I have to pay an extra $2,000 to get an engineering study done. But if I'm going to save an extra $15,000 in taxes, then absolutely it makes sense. So it's just a math equation. You want to look at both of those. But I would say anything over about $250,000 of basis is worth doing. At least, worth having an analysis done, and then it's up to you and your tax preparer whether or not that makes sense. The other thing I want to mention, too, is just kind of price range. So these studies range anywhere from, for an engineering-based study, those are the types of studies we do here at our firm, they range anywhere from $3,000 for single-family rentals up to $50,000 for large ski resorts. Now, I know that's a wide range. Typically, our average fee is right around $6,000 to $7,000, but you're going to see at least a 7 to 10x return on that investment at a minimum. And with bonus depreciation at 100%, it could be 100x return on your investment. So that gives you kind of an idea of what types of properties are worth looking at. And then kind of the process is most cost segregation companies will do a free benefit analysis. So you'll give them some basic information. They'll come back to you and say, okay, based on the information you provided, here's an estimate conservatively of what we think we can generate in terms of deductions. And then you can give that to your tax preparer, your tax strategist, and figure out if that makes sense. Once that analysis has been done and you decide it makes sense, then the IRS does require a site visit. And that's why sometimes those online services aren't as defensible, because there is no site visit. So the IRS requires in their audit guide that a site visit be performed. One of the benefits that came out of COVID is we can do that virtually now on a lot of projects. The larger projects, we still want to send one of our engineers to the property. But on some of the smaller projects that, you know, we can do a site visit with the property manager or the owner, takes 20, 25 minutes for us to do a similar to a Zoom call. We walk through the property together. Once that site visit's complete, it usually takes 2 to 3 weeks to get the final report back. And that, again, is that 40 to 50 page report. But that kind of walks you through the process of how cost segregation works.
No, that's great. And, you know, when we talk about a lot of different terms here, 100% bonus depreciation, just one clarifying point. Are you able to get bonus depreciation if you don't do a cost segregation study?
Great question. No. And the answer is because bonus depreciation only applies to assets that have a useful life of 20 years or less. So remember, if you buy a building and you don't do a cost seg study, your whole building is going to be put on the depreciation schedule as either a 27 and a half year asset if it's residential, or a 39-year asset if it's commercial. So that's why, and that's a great, you know, I can't tell you, we actually attended a IRS conference last year and had a number of CPAs, tax preparers, come to our booth, and they're like, well, bonus doesn't apply to real estate because bonus only applies to assets that have a useful life of 20 years or less. So they're like, why does your sign say bonus? And we're like, well, if you stop and think about it, when you do a cost seg study, we're finding 5, 7, and 15-year assets that bonus does apply to. And so that's why the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was huge for our industry. I don't know if you remember, they were Donald Trump on the, he was running and he was talking about just expensing everything 100%. So if you buy a building for $1 million, you get to just write the whole building off in the first year, which would have been detrimental to our company and our industry as a whole, because we would have all been without jobs, right? There's no need for us to segregate something that you could just write off. Now, we knew that wasn't going to get passed. That was kind of pie in the sky type theory, but bonus depreciation coming out of that Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was huge for our cost segregation industry, because now you have to have a cost segregation study done in order to take advantage of the bonus depreciation.
Yeah, when you go with a reputable firm like yours, you get the correct report, and that's the most important thing. When you go to the IRS and you have, you look for 100% bonus depreciation or 80% bonus depreciation, when you have that documentation, you're in great shape.
That was a layup for you, Eric. I mean, that was an easy one. But, you know, again, throwing around these terms, depreciation, 100% bonus depreciation, there's something called depreciation recapture. And, you know, I think that's where a lot of novice investors kind of get tripped up. When you talk about depreciation, they say, oh, yeah, that's great, but I have to pay it on the back end. And what's that going to look like? And what are some different strategies? And can I mitigate any of that depreciation recapture? Can you just real quick walk people through what depreciation recapture is and how that works? And is there any way to mitigate it?
Sure. So depreciation recapture, if you think about it, you're taking depreciation. Let's just use an office building for an example. You're taking depreciation on a 39-year asset. Well, if you don't own it for 39 years, when you go sell it, the IRS is saying, hey, you didn't hold it for 39 years. We gave you deductions as if you were going to hold it, so we want some of that back. And so that's what depreciation recapture is. The idea behind cost segregation, however, is you're taking your deduction today against your ordinary income. So let's say you're in a 35% tax bracket and a 5% state, you're at 40% total. You're taking your deduction today against income that's being taxed at 40%. If and when you sell that, you're paying some of that back at a recapture rate of 25%. Or a capital gains rate of 20% at most, and saving the spread. And I think I'll back into an example, Greg, because I think it makes a little more sense. But if you think about it this way, if you buy a building for $1 million and 5 years later you sell it for $2 million, if you don't do cost segregation, when you settle up with the IRS, you're telling them that everything is doubled in value, right? I bought all this stuff in this office for $1 million. 5 years later, I sold all this stuff for $2 million, so everything must have doubled in value. Well, the land may have gone up in value, the walls maybe have doubled in value, but certainly my dirty, nasty carpet that's stained is not worth double what I bought it for 5 years ago. So when you do cost segregation, you're able to pull, in that example, you're able to pull the carpet and actually all of the five-year assets out of the sell of the asset. And you don't pay tax on these because they're worth zero. They carpet's a five-year asset. And in that example, we owned it for 5 years, so it has zero book value. So why are you selling your... This is where the light goes off when we explain this to tax preparers. I say, well, why are you selling your client's carpet for double what they paid for it when they bought the building 5 years ago? And they're like, well, I never thought of it that way. It's always just been treated as one big asset, and you have to pay tax on it. And so, again, to kind of summarize, the idea is you take your deduction at a high rate, pay back a portion of it, and that portion is dependent upon how long you've owned the asset. You're paying back a portion of it at a lower rate at a future date and saving the spread. And so as long as you're holding the asset over one taxable year, usually there's the rate arbitrage is going to be enough to not only cover the cost of the cost seg study, but also create significant tax savings.
So, Eric, this is all like, first of all, I want to give you a lot of props. Your public math, my friend, is on point. And my public math is god awful. So I really want to give you, a lot of like, you know, props. And if I can give you a fist bump through the Zoom screen here, I will, because I love that. Number two, this is a lot of heady information, right? I mean, like, if you don't understand the words, if you don't understand the concepts today, like, fear not, right? There's a ton of information. Eric is a phone call away. There's podcasts, there's webinars, there's ebooks, there's Tax-Free Wealth by Tom Wheelwright. I mean, there's masterminds, there's conferences. I mean, there's so much out there that, you know, believe me, if Ray can understand this kind of stuff, then anybody can really, really understand this kind of stuff. So
you ain't kidding, pal.
So I just want to, you know, tell people, listen, don't shy away from, you know, oh, well, real estate's too, it's too much. I don't understand it. It's spreadsheets and cap rates and LTVs and cost seg. And, you know, there's a lot to this. And that's why, you know, people, when they, you know, take a risk, right, in real estate, then they can get paid for it, right? With that being said, Eric, you know, because we're registered representatives of a broker dealer, I just want to reiterate for folks that, listen, Greg nor I, we are not CPAs, we're not tax or legal advisors or authorities. This podcast is purely for entertainment and education, and for you to take the next step and just let you know what's out there and introduce you guys to people like Eric, because they're there to join your team. So Greg, with that being said, I think it's time now that we transfer over to the last three questions of the show. Are you ready? All right. So, Eric, you know, speaking of the Rich Dad Advisors, you know, one of our de facto mentors is Robert Kiyosaki, you know, and a lot of us out there who have seen the light, if you will, and we become real estate investors and we kind of reframe our financial education, we go to Robert Kiyosaki, right? Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cash Flow Quadrant, you know, all those things. But Robert says something, you know, in his older age now, you could be a little bit cynical, I guess. And he says something that goes like this. He says, savers are losers and debtors are winners. What does that mean to you?
Well, that's a great question. So I think that the financial system, the tax code, is built around the ability to invest in all different types. I mean, the whole tax code in general, if you actually read the thousands and thousands of pages, there's very few, and I think Tom says this all the time, there's very few pages that tell you what you have to pay tax on. The other 1,000 pages tell you how not to pay tax. And so the government uses the tax code to incentivize and get across what it is they're trying to accomplish. And I think when you can find out, to go back to your quote there, when you can find a way to use other people's money or to use your own money, that instead of paying it to tax, you come back, you bring that money back through cost segregation or some of these things we've talked about, using your other people's money, using your money that normally would have gone to tax to start investing, the savings can be incredible. And I'll give you a quick example just because it ties to cost seg. When we do a cost seg study, we do the cost seg study on the full purchase price, not your down payment. So if you can leverage a bank, if you've got credit and you can leverage a bank loan, oftentimes, especially with 100% bonus, you're getting 80 to 100% of your down payment back. So I just spent $100,000 to buy a $1 million property. Let's say 20%. I put 20% down. I used $200,000 to buy a $1 million property. I took a loan out for the other $800,000. I do a cost seg study. It creates a 30 or 40% deduction at, what is it, $1 million? That's $400,000 of deduction. If I'm in a 40% tax bracket, that's $160,000 tax saving. So I spent $200,000. I got $160,000 back. And now I've got a $1 million asset. And again, I'm using somebody else's money. And so, yes, you can save your money. You can put it in the bank and get your, you know, 2% from your credit union. I don't even think it's that much. You're 0.5% from the credit union. But investing in real estate, there's huge opportunities to be able to create significant income. So,
There's no doubt about it. And once again, I know Tim already mentioned this, but your public math. I am so nervous when you spit out that 160 right there. I was like, he nailed it. But
I always use really old numbers.
I know, but still, you know, there's a microphone, there's a recording, this is going on to the old interweb, so you never know. But kudos again. You know, this has been a really good class in, you know, kind of cost segregation, which is, you know, kind of not right down the fairway when you talk about real estate investing.
Right.
So this next kind of thought we have is important around the education realm, and it's from Jim Rohn that said, formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune. What does that mean to you, Eric?
That's a great, well, I can tell you firsthand, I have a 16-year-old son, and I just had this conversation with him because he's like, Dad, why are we doing this math? I'm never going to need to know slope or rise over run or any of those things we had to learn in math. And you know, I think experience is way more valuable than a nor traditional education. And the reason I say that is I look back on my college, you know, I went to school. It took me 6 years to get a 4-year degree. My kids give me a hard time. I'm like, hey, I was going, they're like, those are called doctors. And I'm like, I know, son, I just have a, just took me a long time. I'm not a doctor, but you know, the thing I learned most in my schooling is perseverance, number one, and the ability to manage my time and get things done. I can't tell you, you know, who, you know, what war was what. I mean, I can't remember my history classes, my world history. I can't remember most of my math. And I love math and I excelled in math, and I can't remember most of my statistics class or algebra. But what I can do is, and what I've learned to be able to do through going through college was, the ability to to persevere and get things done. And experience is part of that. And so, you know, people, I'm a pretty conservative person. I don't usually jump into things that I don't know or that are risky, but there's been times in my life where I've just had to take the plunge and say, you know what, this is not something you're an expert at, but like you guys have said multiple times, surround yourself with experts. I learned that lesson the hard way. I'm cheap, to be honest with you. I'll give you a quick story. I bought a stereo as a 21-year-old kid. I bought a stereo for my car. The stereo place wanted $250 to install it. I said, absolutely not. I can do it. I went home. It took me 3 days. I had to end up calling them back because I didn't know how to get the cable from my battery to my trunk. Had to call them back. And at the end of the day, I had to pay them $350 to fix my job that I did incorrectly. And so learning the hard way, sometimes you got to take the plunge, but surround yourself with people who have the knowledge, and you just got to do it. You got to trust yourself, know what you're good at, and then surround yourself with experts. You can't be, what is the saying? I'm horrible at sayings. The jack of all trade is the expert of nothing or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. But if you just know a little, you got to find what your niche is, be good at something, but then you also have to be humble enough to say, you know what? My design work sucks. I've tried designing flyers. They look like a kid did them in, you know, junior high or something. Know what you're good at and then outsource the rest and build a team and go that way. But I don't know if that was a great answer to your question, but hopefully that.
Oh, well, you're in good company. Greg and I are both supremely cheap. Greg's worse than I am. And it took me 4.5 years to get my, almost 5 years, I guess, 5 years to get my 4-year degree. So you're in great company here, Eric.
Perfect.
So when, if I'm out at a party, people love to say, well, you know, Tim's a fireman. And I was an ER nurse as well. You know, Tim's a fireman and Tim's a nurse. You know, people go, oh, my God, that's great. That sounds like a great combination. Tell me more about it. You know, so if you're out at a party or you're with it at a backyard barbecue and people are like, well, Eric, what is it that you do? And you're like, well, I do cost segregation, right? And then you go into the whole thing about real estate, right? I would be your best friend at the party and I want to know a lot more, right? But, you know, when you get around to it and people say, well, Eric, isn't investing in real estate just too risky? You know, what would you say to that?
Historic, it depends. There are people who are looking for a quick dime. And if you're looking for a quick dime, you're going to find yourself in real estate deals that don't pencil out or that don't end up making you money. Real estate is a long-term play, in my opinion. You've got wholesalers out there who can find deals and flip them pretty quickly and stuff. But in my world and in my thoughts, I think real estate is a long-term play. Real estate, people need a place to live. There's limited space in our country to live. And or to do business for that matter. And so real estate, I think, will continue to go up. It's a long-term investment. If you're looking into it to the long term, it's definitely not risky. You've got to surround yourself with good people. You got to educate yourself. There's a lot of nuances to it. But again, if you're in it for the long haul, I don't think it's risky at all. It's just I think there's bad situations where people get into it for the wrong reasons. They get into it to make a quick dollar because their friends sold, you know, bought a building for $500,000 and sold it for $1 million. So they think they can come in and do that in a year or two. And it's just not the case. But I think it's a great tool. It's a great way to diversify. What am I? I'm 44 years old. It took me till I was 41 years old to realize that. I pulled my money out of my 401k that was getting, you know, 6 or 7% and put it all into real estate. I had two 401ks from a previous company. So I put all of one of them into real estate. I wanted to make sure I was diversified, but, no, I think it's a great asset class, to be able to create long-term wealth. My goal, just like a lot of investors' goals, is one day I hope to be able to retire with some of my investment properties and be able to live off the cash flow from those properties. So,
well, listen, you're in good company because Greg and I are basically screaming from the mountaintops. You know, if you can create your monthly passive income to be equal to or greater than your monthly expenses, you have now attained financial freedom.
Yeah.
It's not $5 million in the bank. It's not $20 million in the bank. It's not $100 million in the bank. It's your income, your passive income equal to or greater than your monthly expenses. So, Eric, this has been an awesome masterclass on cost seg, taxes, bonus depreciation. you know, to the listeners, it was heady, right? So if you don't understand it, go back and listen. Get the notebook out when you get home. Take some notes. Hop on a call with Eric. Go to his website, which is costsegauthority.com. That'll be in the show notes. Eric, what did I miss? You know, how can people get in touch with you further? And just some closing thoughts.
Yeah, no. So you can reach me. Our website is a great place, www.costsegauthority.com. My contact information is on there. Please use this as a resource, you guys. We're kind of a niche accounting firm. We don't do tax returns here, so don't call me and ask me about earned business income or child tax credits because I don't know anything about that. But feel free to call me and ask me any real estate or depreciation questions you may have. We don't bill by the hour. We're happy to help any way we can. So definitely reach out to us on there. And then just to reiterate what we both talked about, but I think is so important, is make sure you find yourself a tax strategist who understands real estate. I can't emphasize that enough. Too many of us have our eyes on the next deal, adding more doors to our portfolio, et cetera. And it's not what you make, it's what you keep. And so people lose focus of the tax side. Trying to remember who I was talking, it wasn't Tom Wheelwright, it was somebody was telling me, it's the old sports analogy, you know, a lot of people, especially this day and age, when you look at basketball, I coach my son's basketball team, and it's all about being Steph Curry and going and knocking down threes. There's very little defense in basketball anymore, but we can't lose focus of that. And so I look at the tax strategy as the defensive side of real estate. You've got to be able to play defense. You got to be able to keep some of the money that you're making by going out and buying new doors and investing in new properties. And so just definitely keep that in mind. But this has been great. I appreciate you guys having the time to go through this.
Well, you're in good company, like I said, my brother, because Greg and his wife both played college basketball on the Division I level. His son is probably in that, his son is 16. He's on the same pathway. And our dad played college basketball. So anyway, listen, this has been awesome. Definitely reach out to Eric Oliver with the Cost Segregation Authority. Use him as a resource. Begin building out that team. If you need more information about, you know, accountants, we've done two or three shows, Greg, now with accounting firms talking about different strategies, building out the team. So use those resources. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Passive Income Brothers podcast, and we look forward to serving you again next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Passive Income Brothers podcast. We would be grateful for your support of our podcast by giving our show a 5-star rating and review and subscribing to our show on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to take inspired action after listening to this show so that you can start building out your passive income streams. Finally, head on over to citysidecap.com to connect with us and find out more information about how to get started passively investing in real estate.